Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 576, titled Vochwitz, So Near, Yet So Farben. This is being recorded on November 12th of the year 2006. Now, the title, with my characteristically epidemic bad puns, refers to what appears to be certainly underground Reich influence, if not outright control, over one of the funky election software companies that has been the focus of some scrutiny here in the United States, but unfortunately not enough scrutiny. That company is one we've spoken about. It's the Sequoia Company. It has now been taken over by a company called Smartmatic. Now, on its surface, Smartmatic has Venezuelan connections, and there appears to have been a role by elements of the Venezuelan government of Hugo Chavez in helping to coalesce Smartmatic. Smartmatic participated in the overhauling of the election machines in Venezuela prior to Hugo Chavez's referendum in 2004. The money they generated from that helped them to purchase the Sequoia Company. The Sequoia Company itself has a very, very tainted history going back long before Smartmatic took it over. We've talked about Sequoia and its funky past in numerous broadcasts, particularly in some of our conversations with Daniel Hopsicker. Listeners can use the search function on the Spitfire website to locate those. But what we are looking at here in detail, once we sort of dolly back, so to speak, and once the camera begins to pan away from the Chavez connections, what we see is that in point of fact, Smartmatic is controlled by some very, very powerful interests in Europe, specifically in Switzerland, and we are taking a look at the overlapping influence of the Citgo company. The Citgo Group, C-I-T-C-O, is the largest hedge fund manager in the world, and we're going to take a look at some of the hedge funds they manage. And in turn, the majority interest in Citgo for many years was held by the Sandoz Family Foundation. That is the foundation of the Sandoz family. The Sandoz firm is part of the IG Farben chemical cartel constellation, and the Sandoz family's wealth comes from that IG Farben cartel constellation. So it was the IG Farben wealth of the Fondation de Famille Sandoz that was at the core of Citgo. Citgo was founded by the Smeets Family Trust, which now owns a majority, along with former Citgo managers. The Fondation de Famille Sandoz, managed by the aforementioned Pierre Landau, whom we looked at in side one, still is a major minority investor in Citgo. Now, as I've noted in For the Record 573, when we talked about the Alpha Group and the many links between some Eastern European criminals and the very powerful Alpha Group, and in turn, evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of September 11th. If some of this seems confusing, it's because it is supposed to be confusing. The corporate masking that we're looking at here is something that corporate Germany became adept at due to the losing role that Germany played in two world wars, and in turn due to the fact that the major German companies that were involved in those two world wars were part of an international cartel system. So to keep business as usual going, the international cartel system collaborated with many of the dominant German corporations to create an opaque maze that would permit the German corporations to escape war reparations. That maze of corporate masking was one of the things utilized by Martin Bormann in his Flight Capital program, and we're going to take a look at the background to the underground Reich's post-war control of the elements that had been coalesced as IG Farben prior to and during World War II. More, however, before we get into the World War II history, more about the Sandoz Family Foundation and its relationship with both the Smeets Family Trust and Citgo, and it is Citgo that controls Smartmatic, which bought Sequoia. And the references will be in the description for the program. From the Hedge Funds World website, we read, established more than 60 years ago, CITGO, C-I-T-C-O, is a global financial services company with offices in more than 27 countries that provides corporate and fiduciary services, fund administration, and custody and banking services. In July of 1995, the Fondation de Famille Sandoz AG became the majority shareholder of the CITGO Group, bringing with it similar goals, institutional independence, and the financial backing and strategic resolve to undertake and meet the challenges of the financial industry with its continued consolidation and cross-border alliances. Now remember again, the wealth, the capital for the Sandoz Family Foundation coming from the Sandoz firm, part of the IG Farben chemical constellation. Continuing with CITGO from the Hedge Funds World website, the Speets Family Trust, which founded the CITGO Group, continues to be a substantial minority shareholder. CITGO Fund Services, or CFS, the fund administration company of the CITGO Group, is one of the largest fund administrators in the world. CFS administers worldwide more than 1,500 offshore mutual funds with a market value of more than $200 billion. Among these funds are the well-known quantum funds of George Soros, Jaguar Fund, Moore Global, Fairfield Century, Fletcher Income Arbitrage, and many other well-known funds. So this is who these funds are controlled by CITGO. CITGO, in turn, is controlled by the Smeets Family Trust, which helped to found it, but there continues to be significant capital participation by the Sandoz Family Foundation. From yet another website. This is from July 27th of 2005. The CITGO Group Limited today announced that an investor group including the Smiths Family Trust, CITGO managers, and friends of the firm has acquired a controlling interest in CITGO from the Sandoz Family Foundation. Terms of the transaction were not disclosed. The Sandoz Family Foundation, which had made a substantial equity investment in CITGO in 1995, will retain a minority ownership position and a seat on the CITGO board. Now, what we're going to look at next is how the IG Farben firm, of which the IG Farben constellation, it was to the IG Farben constellation that Sandoz belonged, as we looked at in the excerpt from Treason's Peace by Howard Watson Armbruster. What we're going to do is to turn to yet another of the books that is available for download for free on the Spitfire website. This is the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. In addition to the entire book, there is a significant excerpting of that book in the description for the Record program number 305. Much of what I'm about to talk about will be by way of review for members of the audience. Now, as the Third Reich was preparing to go underground on August 10, 1944, SS General Dr. Scheid, acting as a representative for Martin Bormann, met with leaders of German industry and discussed plans to go underground and plans for Germany to move its capital abroad into neutral corporate fronts in neutral countries and use those corporate fronts to preserve German economic hegemony. And then eventually, once a sufficient passage of time had taken place, that wealth was to be recirculated into Germany and to the German subsidiaries abroad to basically resuscitate German economic power. At this meeting, described on page 25 of Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, Dr. Scheid, again, SS general and the personal representative of Martin Bormann, at this meeting, discusses how the Third Reich is going to survive military defeat, and that is basically to rejoin the international corporate community and to utilize the connections between powerful German corporations and not only their subsidiaries abroad, but their cartel partners, including powerful American corporations, to survive. Dr. Scheid said, "The Battle of France is lost to Germany," he admitted, quoting Reichsleiter Bormann as his authority, "and now the defense of the Siegfried Line and Germany itself is the main problem. From now on, German industry must take steps in preparation for a post-war commercial campaign, with each industrial firm making new contacts and alliances with foreign firms. This must be done individually and without attracting any suspicion. However, the Nazi Party and the Third Reich will stand behind every firm with permissive and financial support. Skipping down, Dr. Scheid also affirmed the ground must now be laid on the financial level for borrowing considerable sums from foreign countries after the war, unquote. As an example of the kind of support that had been most useful to Germany in the past, Dr. Scheid cited the fact that, quote, patents for stainless steel belong to the Chemical Foundation Incorporated of New York and the Krupp Company of Germany jointly, and that of the United States Steel Corporation, Carnegie, Illinois, American Steel and Wire, National Tube, etc., were thereby under an obligation to work with the Krupp concern. He also cited the Zeiss Company, the Leica Company, and the Hamburg America Line, parenthetically linked to the Bush family, as typical firms that had been especially effective in protecting German interests abroad. He gave New York addresses to the 12 men. Well, last time I checked, New York was in the United States. And later the afternoon of the August 10th, a smaller conference in the afternoon was presided over by Dr. Busse of the German Armaments Ministry. It was attended only by representatives of Hecko, Krupp, and Röckling. Dr. Busse restated Bormann's belief that the war was all but lost, but that it would be continued by Germany until certain goals to ensure the economic resurgence of Germany after the war had been achieved. He added that German industrialists must be prepared to finance the continuation of the Nazi Party, which would be forced to go underground just as had the Maquis in France, and the IG Farben firm was to be a key for the post-war capital resurgence of Germany. Skipping down yet again, IG Farben was a formidable ally for Reichsleiter Bormann in his plans for the post-war economic rebirth of Germany. In a telephone conversation with IG's Dr. von Schnitzler, Bormann asked what would the loss of factories in France and the other occupied countries mean to German industry in general and to IG in particular. Dr. von Schnitzler said he believed the technical dependence of these countries on IG Farben would be so great that despite German defeat, IG in one way or another could regain its position of control of the European chemical business. They will need the constant technical help of IG's scientific laboratories, as they do not own appropriate installations within themselves. And it was, again, IG Farben's worldwide industrial infrastructure and espionage capabilities and the Nazi Party organization within German corporations abroad that were essential for the post-war capital flight, which became the Bormann Capital Network, and which led to ultimately the economic resurgence not only of Germany, but the post-war underground perpetuation of the Third Reich's power, albeit in an economic, not military, form. Still later, Paul Manning, in Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, discusses the worldwide espionage and corporate infrastructure of IG Farben, how it was inextricably linked with the Nazi Party, and how in turn this was utilized for the post-war capital flight. IG Farben's NW7 office in Berlin compiled military and economic data on all countries for the Wehrmacht. This department was staffed with men of recognized ability in all branches of business and science. It was under the direction of Dr. Max Ilgner, nephew of Hermann Schmitz, IG's president, who was known throughout the industrial world as the master of financial camouflage, unquote. Farben had offices and representatives in 93 countries, and no social gathering of businessmen was too small to be covered by an NW7 representative whose reports on market conditions, factory installations, raw material supplies and research were transmitted immediately to Berlin and Dr. Ilgner. In the United States, NW7 operated through the firm of Chemnico Incorporated, an American foreign subsidiary. Chemnico sent tremendous amounts of information ranging from photographs and blueprints to detailed descriptions of entire industrial complexes and secret processes. From the United States, the new method for production of isooctane used for motor fuels was obtained. A leading IG scientist has stated that this important process originated entirely with the Americans and had become known to us in detail in its separate stages, unquote. The process for producing tetraethyl lead, essential for the manufacture of aviation gasoline, was obtained by Farben in the same way. An IG official commenting on the importance of this acquisition stated, "Without lead tetraethyl, the present method of warfare would be unthinkable. The fact that since the beginning of the war we could produce lead tetraethyl is entirely due to the circumstances that shortly before, the Americans had presented us with the production plans complete with experimental knowledge. Thus, the difficult work of development, we need only recall the poisonous property of lead tetraethyl, which caused many deaths in the United States, was spared us since we could take up the manufacture of this product together with all the experience that the Americans had gathered over long years," unquote. By the way, the story of that and how IG Farben helped Germany get tetraethyl lead and other technologies is discussed at length in Miscellaneous Archive Show M11 and For the Record program number 511. Continuing, more about IG Farben's infrastructure. To be sure, IG's own research facilities produced many a scientific breakthrough for the Third Reich. Its experts developed the noted Buna process for the manufacture of synthetic rubber, freeing Germany from dependence on natural rubber. It developed the hydrogenation process for making motor fuels and lubricating oils from coal. Germany's shortage of bauxite, the raw material essential to manufacture aluminum, was surmounted by its developments in utilizing the element magnesium. This was a time of stockpiling. What NW7 could not purloin, IG's board of directors asked for under cartel agreements with other international firms. In one instance, it purchased 500 tons of lead for production of high-grade aviation gasoline obtained by a Farben Swiss subsidiary from the Ethyl Export Corporation of America. As it made such purchases on the world market in the late 30s, Farben continued to produce and stockpile everything useful to the German armed forces. Of 43 major products by Farben, 28 were primary needs of war makers. IG made all the synthetic rubber in Germany, all the methanol, the serums, and the lubricating oils. IG provided 95% of the poisonous gases as well as over 90% of the nickel and plastics. 88% of the magnesium derivatives used by the Luftwaffe in its aircraft and incendiary bombs came from Farben, as did most of the nitrogen and explosives for the flying bombs in the V-2s. No other German war industry could have functioned without Farben's raw materials and technical assistance. This huge organization functioned as a manufacturing and research arm of the German government, with the responsibility of discovering all possible means of increasing the military power of Germany. More than 4.25 billion Reichsmarks was invested in new plants, mines, and power installations, with other millions going into new research facilities. Skipping down, so close had Farben become to the government that IG always knew in advance all invasions planned by Hitler. It was to supply the materials necessary to each conquest, and when a land had been overrun and subjugated, the Farben experts would handle the consolidation and organization of the industrial facilities as additional supply sources for the German armed forces. As German troops swept across Europe and Hitler proclaimed his vision of a thousand-year Reich, IG Farben also dreamed of world empire. This was outlined with clarity in a document called New Ordnung, or New Order, that was accompanied by a letter of transmittal to the Ministry of Economics. It declared that a new order for the chemical industry of the world should supplement Hitler's new order. Therefore, the document stated, Farben was fitting future industrial plans into such a framework, i.e. a new world order for the chemical industry, paralleling and directly growing out of Hitler's new world order. Skipping down. The close relationship of Farben to the Third Reich leadership was underscored in other ways. IG's leading officials assisted in the formulation and execution of economic policies of government. Its president was a member of the Reichstag, its leading scientist was a chief assistant to Hermann Göring under the four-year plan, its statisticians and economists prepared intelligence for the Nazi high command. Scores of its technicians were at any given time on loan to the air and war ministries. Skipping down, The contact man of NW7 throughout the world were called the IG for Bundesmanner, the liaison officers between IG Farben back in Germany and the branches elsewhere. These IG Verbindungsmanner, as well as the other key Farben representatives working beyond the borders of the Third Reich, were members of the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Their loyalty to Hitler and to the New Order was uncompromising, skipping down again. So now, Martin Bormann had at his command not only the Auslandsorganisation, but also the IG Verbindungsmanner of Farben, which could be counted on to heed his orders when it was time to disperse the commercial assets of the Third Reich. And chief among those were the assets of IG Farben. And as you can see in the description for the Record 305 and in reading the book itself, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, Hermann Schmitz and the other elements of the IG were of great use to Martin Bormann in the Flight Capital Program. Talking about what took place after World War II, by the way, Manning's book was published in 81. The economic unification of West Germany is complete, and if there is any doubt in Europe who in the long run won the peace, there is none whatsoever among the former German leaders dwelling in South America. It is a good bet that if IG Farben's Hermann Schmitz were alive today, he would bear witness as to who really won the war. Schmitz died contented, having witnessed the resurgence of IG Farben, albeit in altered corporate forms, a money machine that continues to generate profits for all the old IG shareholders, an enormous international power for the German cadre directing the workings of the successor firms. To all appearances, Schmitz died in relatively reduced circumstances in 1960 at the age of 79, though immensely wealthy during his lifetime. Any information about his fortune seemingly vanished with his death, but those who know him believe it still exists. He was the master manipulator, the corporate and financial wizard, the magician who could make money appear and disappear and reappear again. His whole existence was leisure domain played out on the game board of IG Farben in his beloved Germany. The son of poor parents, born in Essen in 1981, a loner who made it to the top through ability, diligence, hard work, and singleness of purpose, he resembled Martin Bormann, who likewise had more than just a feel for mathematics but never went beyond high school and had to make it on his own. Their association was close and trusting over the years, and it is the considered opinion of those in their circle that the wealth possessed by Hermann Schmitz was shifted to Switzerland and to South America and placed in trust with Bormann, the legal heir to Hitler. Schmitz's wealth, largely IG Farben bearer bonds, converted to the big three successor firms, shares in Standard Oil of New Jersey equal to those held by the Rockefellers, General Motors, and other U.S. blue-chip industrial stocks, and the 700 secret companies controlled in his time by IG, as well as shares in the 750 corporations he helped Martin Bormann establish during the last year of World War II, has increased in all segments of the modern industrial world. The Bormann Organization in South America utilizes the voting power of the Schmitz Trust, along with their own assets, to guide the multinationals they control as they keep steady the economic course of the fatherland. And still more about IG Farben and its post-war resurgence, skipping down once again. By 1956, the three major multinationals, Hoechst, BASF, and Bayer, reshaped from the 159 companies within Germany that had comprised IG Farben, were generating record profits for the original 450 major Farben stockholders, who had organized themselves into the IG Farben Stockholders Protective Committee in Bonn. The Big Three went on expanding, tripling capitalization in 1956 from investment funds that poured in from the interlocking companies established in safe haven companies by Martin Bormann and Hermann Schmitz. There was a return more vigorous than ever of the huge, monolithic industrial multinationals that dominated the German economy before and during World War II. Each of these three spin-offs from IG Farben today does more business individually than did Farben at its zenith when its corporate structure covered 93 countries. BASF and Bayer individually boast worldwide sales of nearly $10 billion annually, while Hoechst, now the world's largest chemical company, generated $16.01 billion in worldwide sales in 1980. Each does more business than E.I. DuPont de Nemours, with sales of $9.4 billion. Skipping down. Together, these three multinationals assure permanent prosperity for the original 450 Farben stockholders, their banks, and the shadowy shareholders of the Bormann Organization in South America who guard and vote the Hermann Schmitz Trust Fund through intermediaries at the annual meetings of BASF, Bayer, and Hoechst. And, of course, the schemes of economic control that were so carefully crafted by people like Hermann Schmitz and Martin Bormann and others for the post-war revival of the German economy exist to this day, and the available evidence suggests very strongly that they control Citgo, consequently, also Smartmatic, and also Sequoia. And of the Bormann Capital Organization's position astride German industry and through the international cartel system, the rest of the world, atop an organizational, but this is from Martin Bormann, Nazi in exile, atop an organizational pyramid that dominates the industry of West Germany through banks, voting rights enjoyed by majority shareholders in significant cartels, and the professional input of a relatively young leadership group of lawyers, investment specialists, bankers, and industrialists, Bormann is satisfied that he achieved his aim of helping the fatherland back on its feet. To ensure continuity of purpose and direction, a close watch is maintained on the profit statements and management reports of corporations under its control elsewhere. This leadership group of 20, which is in fact a board of directors, is chaired by Bormann, but power has shifted to the younger men who will carry on the initiative that grew from that historic meeting in Strasbourg on August 10, 1944. Old Heinrich Müller, the chief of security for the NSDAP in South America, is the most feared of all, having the power of life and death over those deemed not to be acting in the best interests of the organization. Skipping down. What will not pass is the economic influences of the Bormann Organization, whose commercial directives are obeyed almost without question by the highest echelons of West German finance and industry. All orders come from the shareholders in South America, I have been told by a spokesman for Martin Bormann. Well, indeed. One wonders to what extent they might actually control a whole lot more than just West German or German industry. One wonders to what, given some of the third position links or links of people within the third position milieu to Chavez, just who's pulling his strings. Perhaps he doesn't even know himself. Recall that Venezuela is a member of OPEC, and recall the position of the Bormann Group within the petroleum industry. Now, this broadcast has exemplified why utilizing the websites is important. There'll be a long article-length description of For the Record 576 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Please use not only the other descriptions and the other programs, but the books and the search function and all of the other information available on the Spitfire website. Many of those old anti-fascist books go into detail, at great length and into great detail, about IG Farben, about the international cartel system. So if some of what you heard here might seem a little opaque or a little bit confusing, well, it was meant to be confusing. It was meant to confuse regulators, but on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, there's more than enough information available to help you straighten it out. This concludes For the Record program number 576, Side 2, Vote Schwitz. So near and yet so Farben. This is being recorded on November 12th of the year 2006. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.